I'm kind of fascinated by the fact that you seem to be familiar with all these things I've done, but the actual name just sort of blinks out of existence. I guess I guess with one letter in it, in the first name, it's already halfway gone.
Now presenting the Webcomic Beacon Newscast.
Welcome one and all to the Webcomic Beacon episode number 178. This is the new newscast for April 10th, 2011. And you can find all this and more at webcomicbeacon.com. I am your host, Ross Scott of The System, which can be found at systemcomic.com. With me today, of course, keeping everything running behind the scenes and chiming in whenever he damn well feels like, is Fess of PSIwebcomic.com. Hey, Fess.
Hello, I'm finally back.
Great to have you. also with us today, the man who's normally behind the scenes compiling all of the news articles that you hear every week is, how would you like to be referred to?
Eric.
All right.
Eric.
Holy crap, it's Eric!
Let's not go through the poor choice of domain names and aliases of my youth. Let's just use Eric.
Is Eric of Exern, which can be found at exiern.com. And, you know, on behalf of all the people who listen to the show, really thanks for always putting together all the articles. How long does that normally take you?
It's like an hour a day, or a half hour a day. I just get on, check the news sources, and anything that looks cool, I pop in there.
Nice. Okay, and finally with us today, one of the few repeat guests we've had so far is T. Campbell of A Million Comics. That's not the name of one, that's actually A Million Comics. Kurt, let's just go with Gilded Age. Of Gilded Age, which can be found at gildedage.net. Hey, T.
Hey. Hey, Ross. So, good to see you. Yeah.
You too. Is there anything that you're known for that we just didn't know it was you that you'd like to bring up?
that's kind of an inside joke for all you people listening at home. I just completed the first mini comics day and with a local cartoonists at 757 CCC. That was a blast. I've done a tech satire, Widgetitis, which I think is probably going to be relevant to our first news item. And we don't need to go through the whole list. Just freaking Google me.
I do have one question though. I have a question. Are you you're the same person who wrote the History of Webcomics book, which I'm holding in my hand, I'm guessing, correct?
I thought I burned all those.
Oh, because I have it, and it's like, okay, yeah, this is one thing I should have realized. I have it here, and you're on the show, and I'm probably going to want to ask you to be on a specific take on History of Webcomics for the regular podcast at some point, if you think you may be interested.
I would be interested. I have.
Whoever typing is typing way too loud.
About that project is a serious understatement, but
right.
But it's something that I think is worth talking about. Yeah.
Awesome. Excellent. All right. Now on with the show. Thank you.
All right. Okay. So on to our first article of the day. Again, all these articles have been compiled by Eric himself, and it's not often that I get to say that, and he's actually here and listening. Do you actually listen to the shows, Eric?
Yes, I listen to the shows.
Okay.
I don't like the show.
This is an awesome collection of news.
Yeah. Okay, so this first article comes to us from Daily Cartoonist, and it seems that the long-running joy of tech, which now will now be moving in part to the Wall Street Journal's AllThingsD.com. which is apparently their All Things Digital collection, and reaching their pseudo-circulation of 917,000 people, theoretically.
I think they're, correct me if I'm wrong here, because I, but aren't they already syndicated by All Things D, and now they're being syndicated by Business Week as well?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. So Business Week is also running it, in their weekly magazine.
You are right about the, suddenly reaching 917,000 more people.
Comes clear that I haven't had coffee yet today, but yes, so they're continuing to be in the Wall Street Journal and also in Business Week. So they're really just taking over, I think, is the pretty much the goal.
Go ahead. Over at Widgetitis, a tech satire strip that I happen to do with Dave Belmore and Doc Martin, our immediate reaction to this probably can't be shared on a PG-13 broadcast. I mean, I'm very happy for them. The fact that they were able to do this and succeed at it was one of our original inspirations. And yet, there's definitely that 20-second surge of professional jealousy that in all honesty, I have to cop to. But they've paid their dues. They've been doing this for almost a decade. I'm sorry, correcting myself, over a decade now. Yeah. they've got a they're very good at tracking and responding to the latest news items. They've got a sense of humor that hits the it's a family strip, and it hits that kind of comfortable tone that you'd expect from most newspaper comics, but they're a lot more knowledgeable about tech issues than newspaper comics have ever been or ever will be. We salute them, and we're responding to this. We're responding to this also as an opportunity. We're going to some of the major tech brands like Gizmodo, Engadget, and talking to them about some kind of strategic alliance at this point. Who knows what will come of that, but it's a sign that webcomics in general are that much more integrated with the rest of the media landscape, which is probably their best shot at long-term health and survival.
And that was the newscast.
Yeah. Did I leave time for anything else?
Thanks for joining us. Yeah. I think it's great that, I got to say, this is one of those comics. This comic to me falls under what I am now referring to as T. Campbell syndrome, where I've seen it in lots of places but was not familiar with the original source. Which is my new term for that.
there are worse things to happen. I'd rather if you have to remember me or the work, I'd rather you remember the work, because it's what I'm more proud of.
But, I mean, to jump off of what he was talking about, the vertical integration and the fact that one comic does this is now giving leverage to other comics to say, hey, look at, Business Week is doing this. This is something that you might be interested in as well. And I think it's a step forward, even if you are incredibly jealous that someone else is famous and not you. But I think it is a good thing in general.
Yeah, you know, you can't help but feel like a little bit of joy and a little bit of sadness. Joy and then sadness that it wasn't you. And yeah, what are you gonna do at the end of the day, right?
Gonna write an angry blog about it at the end of the day.
It wasn't them for 11 years. I mean, they labored in relative obscurity for a long time before.
I can't wait until 11 years from now when I get picked up by. Oh well. Okay, on to the next article. This one comes to us from Comic Book Resources and news that Tokyopop, after a kind of experiment with bringing social media into their website and allowing a lot of user-generated material, has decided they aren't such a fan of that in practice anymore, and are gave notice to all the people that have posted stuff on their site that they have not much time to get it off before it all gets trashed, and it's all going to be replaced with a newer, cleaner, simpler, happier Tokyopop website. And you can see a link to the screenshot over at Comic Book Resources. So I think the biggest difference, and they talk about this in the article, is the if you go to Tokyopop's current site, it is, messy, to say the least. It is just
My God, yes.
And I as a graphic designer, you can't help but look at it and think, what am I supposed to be doing here? And it's really not clear. And so they're basically replacing that, and their, like, giant tweets area and a giant Google Ads box with, a new site that's going to feature a smaller Google Ads box and much cleaner, simpler use of their space and clear navigation and all that stuff. So chalk one up for graphic design, basically.
I think it's also chalk one up for limited social media. I think we've seen a couple of these coming up where companies say, oh, social media is the new thing. Let's put social media all over our site, and it looks awful. And they're starting to realize they don't want to just throw open the gates and put social media everywhere.
Well, there's something that's called the mullet business model, which is where you take a website, and the idea is you curate and keep a good close eye on the front page. You keep that well kind of in check, and then you let whatever the heck they want happen behind that. So that way you have a good kind of front-facing business in front and then a complete party in the back. And a lot of sites have
That's a great term. I'm going to start using that all the time.
I wish I could say I invented that, but I heard it somewhere. But it's pretty accurate to what you see on a lot of social media sites. And if you look at YouTube, if you ever go to the front page of YouTube, how often do you do that? But, you know, that front page has that basically is really curated. Here's a bunch of places you can jump in kind of thing. And then on the inside, it's just crazy for social media. But I think Tokyopop really early on just thought, oh, well, shoot, we need this social media thing. We're also losing money left and right. And
they weren't when they started
stuff.
I was doing a lot of work for Tokyopop during the period where they started to push this social media thing. Sorry, what?
Oh, they weren't paying their artists for a while. I kept hearing about that. I remember.
Oh, no, that's not what I'm talking about. They paid me. The company seemed to put all its chips on the idea that that the manga and anime fan base in America could essentially become their fan base. And they set this up, and they were trying to be the Facebook for the manga fan, which is, you know, not a terrible sounding idea on the face of it, but you've got to, but something like that has got to feel very, very organic. I think a big part of the reason why Facebook originally succeeded was that it was originally marketed from college students to college students. As many different tricks as Tokyopop tries to dress this up, it can't escape the fact that it's a company, a very traditional publishing company, that's trying to market to fans. I had absolutely no interest in using any of their site specific features. There was no benefit to me that couldn't be given in greater measure by using my own site, or even something like Comics Genesis. And when you're failing to compete with Comics Genesis, you've got a problem.
Oh, I'm sorry, we don't use the name that those words. There's rules around here, okay?
There are.
That's not a... Oh, I'm sorry. Was that the equivalent of the F-bomb?
It really was. It was worse, in fact.
We shall not speak its name.
I do have to correct you on a couple of things. This isn't really a PG-13 podcast. You can swear. I just may edit it out later. So.
Okay.
I see. Okay.
I have to mention. You can't mention those words without me mentioning this. I was on a panel one time that was supposed to be called your basic. It was supposed to be your basic how to make webcomics panel, like a 101 kind of panel at Otakon. They had 10 people on the panel already. That's like bad step one. Then, in addition, one guy went up and turned it into how to be the next Mega Tokyo, which none of us are. Like, none of us on the panel were Mega Tokyo or wanted to be Mega Tokyo. So that's a horrible reference point. And then he gave a PowerPoint presentation. A PowerPoint presentation that basically said, well, if you want to do this, guess what? You can do it on Comic Genesis. If you want to do this, guess what? You can do it on Comic Genesis. If you wanted to do this, guess what? Comic Genesis. Like, and he did this for 45 minutes. Luckily, on that panel, I had one comrade that could help me fix this, Phil Kahn. So Phil and I decided to take over the panel from him and just started talking over him as much as possible. And it became a war of a panel, like where the panelists were trying to all out-talk each other. It was the biggest mess I have ever seen ever. But now those of us that were on that panel have become like war buddies, where it's like we all survived. We all survived together.
The amateur comics zone is a war zone. I think that's the clearest way to connect that story back to the Tokyopop story. It's just a freaking mess. And you know, there's another piece in here about Drunk Duck who we might get to that might connect to that as well. Anyway, that's all I have to say about the Tokyopop website right now.
I don't have anything to say.
With that, we can just move on to our next article. There's something more to discuss. Okay, so there's a really interesting project going on Facebook called "What is the Use of a Book?" Of a book without pictures, and this article comes to us thanks to geeknews.mtv.com, which featured it in its Daily Geek section. It's basically it's a project where they're trying to take every paragraph of Alice in Wonderland and put illustration with it. And from the post, they say, "We are collectively illustrating Alice's adventures in Wonderland one paragraph at a time. As usual, this is open for artists to work in any style, media, or motif. For rules, details, and to claim a paragraph, email shenlon@hotmail.com. So be sure to go check that out. There's a lot of crazy artwork there. Did you guys get a chance to check it out?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really sweet, actually.
It's
less controversial than the Bible and easier than Meditations on First Philosophy. We've got a few attempts to illustrate most paragraphs on Alice in Wonderland that are called movies. but you know, it seems like an interesting idea and a nice way to bring together a lot of different art styles, a sort of anthology.
Fest, this kind of reminded me of your, I'm totally blanking on her name, the character you're trying to put in every comic.
Jenny Everywhere.
Jenny Everywhere, thank you.
Oh, that was you?
Her name's like Jenny and she's everywhere. What's that called?
Yeah, Jenny Everywhere. No, I didn't create her, but I basically am the curator of the most comprehensive archive online about her. And we lost T. Campbell. I'm going to get him back.
Oh.
Because he asked if it was me. So
our answers just got a lot shorter.
I like to correct people saying, "I no, I didn't do her." So let's get T back.
Yeah. Just while he's getting him back, I mean, the Alice in Wonderland is probably the best book to pick for this because it's a weird, surreal book to begin with. Yep. So with the constant changing of styles and everything, it works. I mean, it works. You say, well, the styles and the artwork is all over the place, but for Alice in Wonderland, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I was looking through some of the illustrations on it. I mean, and it's great to see that you have some that are just kind of traditionally illustrated. We have a lot that are also just using mixed media, like in a lot of different interesting ways. A lot of mixture of photography and stuff like that. And it's great to see that kind of combination. A lot of times, as artists, we think, well, if we didn't draw it, I don't know if it counts. It's starting to, I don't know. It really makes you kind of think outside the box a little bit. So if you're ever looking for inspiration, maybe go check it out. Okay, so what's going on with Skype right now?
I am not sure. And I think we got T back. Hello? There it answered and then it disappeared. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. So yeah, I'll definitely post a link to this in the show notes and encourage people because there's plenty of paragraphs to go around in that book. So
yeah,
let's see here.
I'd rather have a short paragraph or a long paragraph. Like I'm not sure which would be harder.
Well, let's see here. There was somebody I was doing some comic work for the Cameo comic. And the guy who is writing the script has a habit of writing two actions in a single panel.
Oh,
yeah. And so it's like I have to simplify it or I have to just split it. But
yeah, I've been taking writing submissions. I've started up this site where I said, okay, you can submit a comic strip and I'll get the artist to illustrate it. And that has been the worst part of it is all these scripts where, you know, the description is all of this backstory. A young man who grew up in Harvard, who went to Harvard University and has a wife and three children at home, walks into a building.
Hello?
Hello?
Hey. Hey.
Yeah, Skype died on me. I don't know what happened.
I think what happened is Skype died on you.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened.
That's about as succinct as it gets.
Yeah, well, let's
let's forge on.
Let's move on.
Okay, so well, we just talked about the Facebook art project, so we're on to Japan Needs Heroes. Okay, our next article comes to us via endcomic.com. Who we lose?
Oh. We lost him again. No!
Anyway, should I keep going? I don't even know what to do.
For this one, I think you can just go ahead and I'll just keep trying.
Okay.
I would kind of like him on here because I want to know if he knows Benny Powell, because this man is a mystery to me. but go ahead.
Okay. So this there is a group that is putting together an anthology series to help support Japan. It is called Japan Needs Heroes, and it features a great array of both online and print known comic artists, including some of our webcomic own, like Jen Brazas, who does Mystic Revolution, and Brian, I always mess up his last name, Folk, who does Flipside, as well as a bunch of others. And they have a Kickstarter account. It has 22 days left to go as of this recording. It's being put together, as you said, by Benny Powell. And it's already over 100% funded. They were trying to raise $10,000 for the comic, and they've already raised more than that, but there's still 22 days to donate and help make the comic happen, and all the extra proceeds go to support Japan. Not only Japan, but a particular group. I'm trying to find the name of the group. I had it before, of course. Oh, and a foreword by Stan Lee.
Yes.
Oh,
that is
the Japan Society. That's what it's called. The Japan Society, an organization that sends 100% of our funds directly to those affected.
It was 100% of profits, not the funds, but yeah. But the printing is being done at cost, so.
Right, so that cuts down a lot on the overhead.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I want to know who Benny Powell is, because this man has the Jedi mind trick. He has the ability to put these things together that you never would have thought would have gone together. He's done this a couple of times on different things. And it's,
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yes. For now.
Okay, I have switched to my I've switched to my cell phone's Skype, so we should be have smoothed out the issue for now.
Okay,
this is the most like haphazard recording session I think we've had in a while.
Yeah, well, it's all my multitasking computer's fault. I was doing I was probably doing too much even when I first heard from you.
We're on the Japan Needs Heroes article now with the Kickstarter project.
Do you know Benny, Benny Powell?
Yeah, I don't know if you caught this before, but we've agreed to do it. Me and at least probably three of the artists I'm working with.
I didn't know that.
Jeez.
It seems like a very worthy thing. It seems well organized, and I like and trust the guy who's putting it together. So yeah, we're looking forward to it.
So Benny contacted you, or I mean, were you friends with him already?
He contacted me through Giselle. He knew Giselle a bit better. He's a Keen Spot veteran. What's that?
Who's Giselle? Just so we're clear.
Giselle Lagasse, the artist who created Penny and Aggie with me and whose material I now edit. Both of us have been on Keen Spot for a long time, but she was involved with the community aspect of it longer than I was, and that's how Brian knows her.
Gotcha.
Oh, so he's been doing something before his current comic, then?
Wayward Sons?
Yeah.
Because
that's only like a year and a half old.
But it was a Keen Spot property in the beginning, I believe.
What? I mean, I've only have seen this comic start up in the last year and a half, so. Has it been waiting, or? Well, okay.
Okay. Anyway, so they're doing this Kickstarter. So it seems to me like yet another Kickstarter success. I mean, I feel like we've seen a lot, especially in the webcomics world at this point. There's been Jeez. Well, let's see. My friend Jamie Noguchi was able to make Puppy Cow thanks to it. There was a lot of pre-order books. I know Steve Willis is using it for his next short packed anthology series. I can't even think of others. Can you guys?
We had a news story a little while back about the Huck Finn comic where they replaced all the slaves with robots.
Yep.
And Neil Gaiman advocated that. Yeah, Kickstarter is a good one. I've seen a lot of Kickstarter failures too, though. I mean, that if you got an idea that catches people, it's good. But if you don't catch people,
I gotta admit, I haven't seen that many Kickstarter failures. And to me, I mean, that's the thing. A lot of times with the internet and with what becomes news is that you only hear about it when it's a complete success or a complete failure. You don't hear about
One of the things about
We don't have a news article every week that says a bunch of comics that said they would update this week did. And we're pretty good. Like, that's not an article we ever cover. But, I mean, every week there's a ton of webcomic artists who are out there tirelessly just putting in the work to do something. You have to do something either amazingly successful or amazingly failing in order for it to really catch. But, I don't know. I keep seeing so many Kickstarters that I gotta say I kind of want to do a Kickstarter just to see if it'll happen.
Yeah, me too. And I'm hoping to get that off the ground in a couple of weeks. My other creative outlet, the crossword puzzle, is something that I've been looking to get back into for a while, and I've been talking with some people about putting together an anthology of crosswords that appeal to the science fiction fan. And I want to do this in part as a stepping stone to a nonprofit to benefit that particular art form, because I think it's in a position as beginning to struggle in ways that remind me of the ways comics were struggling a lot in the late 1990s.
Wait, are there a bunch of collector's cards for crosswords that have holographic covers?
Well, you'd be surprised. not quite such a such an obvious surface symptom, but the sense that it's dominated by a group of increasingly inward-looking and nostalgic fans, which are keeping it alive at the present, but at the expense of really letting it expand outward into the future. It's kind of a concern of mine, and since this is somewhat charitable, basically nonprofit, I figure that might appeal to people who would otherwise be reluctant to open their wallets.
Right.
We'll see how it turns out. But the nice thing about Kickstarter, and certainly the nice thing about this Kickstarter project, is that it takes a lot of the sting of failure away. If you invest in a Kickstarter project and it doesn't happen, your money gets automatically refunded. If you produce a Kickstarter project and it doesn't get come together, then you don't really lose very much at all. Whereas if you publish a 1,000 copies of your first comic and Diamond only orders 512 of them, you can take as long as 11 years to sell the rest of them, in my personal experience. So, yeah, there's that.
All right. Well, with that, why don't we just move straight into the next article? So this one comes news from Fleen that Ubisoft and its comics, including most specifically Help Desk, was born over 15 years ago on March 31st, 1996. Help Desk started publishing. It debuted in OS2/2, the e-zine, and has since been publishing ever since. And an article on his site where he just kind of talks about it and kind of his process over the last 15 years, including saying, and I love this part, "All I wanted to do was publish. Before I discovered my web goal other than music was to publish an independent editorial newspaper. After my web goal didn't change so much as the format did, the editorial newspaper became a website where I would publish an editorial in comic form. My topics became less generally political and more specifically so, focusing on an industry that even then seemed bent on grabbing as much as it could while delivering as little as it could get away with." I thought that was pretty nice. Do you guys read Help Desk? Have you ever read Help Desk? I'm sure you've come across it at some point.
I did back in the day, but I mean, that was one of my early comics, but it really wasn't my taste, so I kind of moved on. It was big one. There were far fewer comics on the web for me.
I respect Help Desk's noble ability to look exactly like it has for the last 15 years.
It does have a certain dedication, you know. It reminds me a lot of both Dilbert and User Friendly. I feel like those strips together sort of represent a movement in tech comics and geek comics in the mid to late 1990s, and they didn't, and none of them have seen any particular incentive to change much since then. They're still basically written with the same voice and with a few refinements, still drawn pretty much the same.
Speaking of which, did any of you guys catch Scott Adams' op-ed for, I think it was the Wall Street Journal, where he talks about how more people should be trained to be entrepreneurs? Did you guys see that one? I know. That wasn't in the article list. I just caught it yesterday. I'll try and find it and maybe talk about it later. Once I actually find the damn.
That's not on the list, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's not on the
list. I only know the list.
If you're not on the list, you don't get into the newscast. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry,
maybe next week.
My bad. Is Adams with two D's? I think it is. Nope, one D. So an article from GigaOM about... has Dr. Horrible really helped build the web series world? So after the obvious success of Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog, which just show of hands, we're all fans of, right?
I've actually not seen it yet.
Yeah.
Fess, you haven't seen it?
No, I've not. I'm so busy.
It's 45 minutes.
And it's wonderful.
All right, I'll make a note to look at. I'm writing it down right now.
Thank you. And this article kind of speculates that maybe this is going to be the first of many after its success. And to me, the web series model is very similar to the web comics model, and therefore kind of shed some light. Maybe there's more kind of looking for that same sort of audience that we're trying to...
Wait a minute.
At.
You said it was 45 minutes, so is this like one 45-minute stint, or is this like a collection of things that add up to 45 minutes?
Collection of three episodes that add up to about 45 minutes.
Because when you say web series, the only thing that comes to my mind first and foremost is Red versus Blue, which has been online for 6 years at least.
There's also The Guild, which...
I heard of that, but I it wasn't my thing when I saw it.
Dr. Horrible is sort of unique, and the article does go into this, and this was the interesting discussion point here, because while Dr. Horrible was a success, and it's a success for every measure. Dr. Horrible could only have been made by Josh Whedon during a writer's strike when everyone was out of work. I mean,
it's an artifact of the writer's strike. the people who were kind of expecting there to be 10 or 20 similar things over the course of the next few years, they kind of lost that bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's because Josh Whedon had a ton of resources at his command, resources that were idle during the writer's strike. And the web series we've seen since then just don't have the pull or the budget. And people like Josh Whedon, who do have the pull and the budget, they go on to make regular movies.
Right.
And Josh Whedon is saying, I always wanted to get back to Dr. Horrible. Oh, but I'm making the Avengers movie, and that kind of takes a little bit of my time.
Oh, God.
And it's one of those things that the talent and the resources we saw in that, you're not going to get for free. And if you have that talent and resources, usually you move up. And
I heard a little rumor, this actually backs up what you're saying, but I heard a little rumor to the effect that there was a possible sequel to Dr. Horrible planned, but that it would be released directly to the theaters, like, a grown-up movie.
Yeah. and people have talked about that as well, although I think there's some reluctance on that end. I mean, there's been a Dr. Horrible comic book. There's been a Dr. Horrible comic book collection, and there's been stuff on the low end.
Stage musical.
Yeah.
It's been adapted to the stage, too. So. Yeah.
But new stuff we don't see because, there have been a couple of things. Like a little while back, we saw the teenage superhero thing, which had great graphics, but the acting was horrible, and the writing was horrible. And to get something that good is really a lot of work. And you don't see it that often.
Okay. Why don't we move right on to the next article then? So this comes from actually my friend Austin, which I was so happy to see that this kind of spread around like it did. Austin Kleon, who does, the kind of newspaper blackout, poetry series, he did a great, talk and posted it up. In written form called How to Steal Like an Artist and 9 Other Things Nobody Told Me. So here's some of the kind of bullet points just to go through. Number one is steal like an artist. Where do you get the ideas? And the honest artist writes, he steals them, or I steal them. Nothing is original. It is only when you take certain things that are unoriginal and remix them that you come up with an original idea. He talks about the genealogy of ideas and how they kind of collect. The artist is a collector, not a hoarder, mind you. There's a difference. Hoarders collect indiscriminately. The artist collects selectively. They only collect things that they really love. Garbage in, garbage out, my mom used to say. It used to drive me nuts, but now I know what she means. Your job is to collect ideas. The best way to collect ideas is to read. Don't wait until you know who you are to make things, because it's very possible you can figure out who you are by making things. Fake it till you make it is another way to put that. Write the book you want to read. That's number 3. Number 4 is use your hands. Number 5 is side projects and hobbies are important. Number 6, the secret, do good work and then put it where people can see it. Number 7, geography is no longer our master. Number 8, be nice, the world is a small town. And number 9, be boring, it's the only way to get work done.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yep. It is great advice for everyone.
Yeah.
And I guess there isn't a discussion on that.
Right, well, anyway, be sure to read the whole thing. It's really interesting. I love the last one, be boring, it's the only way to get work done. He says, I'm a boring guy with a 9-to-5 job who lives in a quiet neighborhood with his wife and his dog. That whole romantic image of the bohemian artist doing drugs and running around and sleeping people with everyone is played out. It's for the superhuman, the people who want to die young. The thing is, art takes a lot of energy to make. You don't have that energy if you waste it on other stuff. Man, that explains so much about, well, us.
that were boring.
Yeah. Oh, and finally, the last one. Oh, I missed one. Creativity is subtraction, which I think is also really great and describes a lot about his process. So be sure to check out that article and check out his work over at AustinKleon.com. It's really great. He's actually the reason I got to go to Texas this year. Austin's a really nice – he's a really great guy. He decided he wanted to do a panel for South by Southwest and asked me if I wanted to be a part of it. And I got a free trip to Texas. It was great. So, yeah, go support Austin. He's awesome. Okay, next article. So
– hang on. Right. I reorganized these so you may have to refresh your article. The next article I wanted to talk about was the drunk duck thing.
Oh, okay. We can skip over that.
Now, the link that's actually posted here, I don't think it goes to the right thing to what to talk about. But, what?
It goes to Fleen. So, over on Fleen, Gary received news that he got some email this weekend about discontent in the Drunk Duck forums with anger building on the part of creators with current Grunt Duck overlords, Wowio. But he refuses to check it out for himself because he hates looking at comments.
If anybody has been around, they may notice that Drunk Duck has been having some issues for the past couple of weeks. Their server host, which was also the host that was handling their backups, fucked up, to put it lightly. So a lot of comics that were uploaded after mid-January were completely deleted. But the at least post information was still there, just the images were gone. But the whole point is that they've been trying to get Drunk Duck completely new code, because basically it's multiple Band-Aids on an old code. And they're trying to move to a completely new site and have a completely new setup. They had a drunk cast or Drunk Duck podcast or whatever. Yep. They had the guy who was working really hard at trying to fix everything behind the scenes, explaining what is going on. And while I'm a fan of if you have your own site, Drunk Duck has been a very great site for many people, especially as a mirror site for what it's done. So I don't want people just to jump ship or just totally discount them based on the whole thing with Wowio that bought Drunk Duck. The guy on the show says he knows the guys, one of the guys I think who runs Wowio, and he was brought over to help on Drunk Duck, and they're not trying to abandon it, and they're, you know, the whole reassuring stuff, and they're working
Wowio
hard is all I'm
Drunk
saying.
Duck. So. Platinum Studios bought Drunk Duck.
It's not Platinum Studios anymore. Wowio bought it from Platinum Studios. And Wowio is no longer Platinum Studios.
Yeah, Wowio is on its own and owns it.
Yeah, the deck chairs on that boat have been rearranged so many times.
Okay. I guess what really matters is what the situation is now. I've always had an opinion about Drunk Duck. Well, not always, but since 2005 or so.
Opinions, so that doesn't surprise me.
Drunk Duck seems to me like it's like webcomics, only in hell. the way that it's been organized and come together, there's just been one issue after another, and everyone I know who's on there who has who seems to have a lot of talent and promise is either deluding themselves greatly about what it has to offer or can't wait to get off.
Right.
And you know, This latest round of problems seems awfully familiar to
Comic
to
Genesis.
Me after watching thousands of comics get deleted due to a technical issue that they had in 2005. Watching them get swallowed by this larger and highly questionable company and immediately start getting focused on a publication contest, which didn't really translate into a benefit for anybody. You know, get off Trunk Duck. I know how prejudiced that sounds, but
no, that's fine.
There are free services that are better than what it has to offer in almost every way.
If you go to like Webcomics Nation, I really hate their setup. I really hate the design. If you don't do anything with it, and Drunk Duck, I would say, is perfectly fine for like the hobbyist, the amateur that just wants to put something up and they don't want as much headache. I mean, 5 minutes, you got a comic up and online on Drunk Duck. But if you're like aiming for professional standards and such, yeah, you should definitely be getting your own space or applying to some other places that offer more than I would call Drunk Duck a great starter or a great mirror site.
If
you're a hobbyist, you can put it on Blogger. I mean, if you're a hobbyist, you can put it on WordPress or Outpress. There's no reason, except for the community.
Right.
That I can see to stay. And, you know, the community is kind of an inarguable incentive. That's like telling people to give up their friends and go get some better friends. But but it shouldn't... Burton, I guess you're right. For some hobbyists, all this behind-the-scenes stuff doesn't really matter that much as long as the company can maintain basic comfort levels, which it sounds like they're not doing now, and they didn't do in that 2005 incident, which was the first time that came to my attention. But most of the time, for the past 6 to 8 years, they have. If you're a basic level hobbyist, then I guess not completely terrible, but get off Drunk Duck, seriously.
To jump down to a later news item, and I'm gonna jump on Ross here from Fleen via DJ Kaufman's website. DJ Kaufman, who has had a long and sordid history with Drunk Duck, has posted online how to host your comic in several easy steps. So,
yes, indeed.
Yeah, he did that.
Yeah, so...
continue.
So, yeah, I think that there is a sort of agreement that Drunk Duck and hosting sites like that sort of had their place at a time, mm-hmm. but it's gotten so cheap to host your comic and so easy, it doesn't make a lot of sense anymore, except for the community, which, yet again...
Your mileage will vary.
Yeah. okay, so... on to the next article. The Eisner nominees were announced, and for Best Digital Comic, we have 5 good digital... I've heard of at least 3 of them. The Abominable Charles Christopher by Carl Kerschel.
Mm-hmm.
The Bean by Travis Hansen. Lackadaisy by Tracy Butler. Max Overreacts by... I'm going to screw this up, aren't I? Kanan...
Grawl.
And Zara's Paradise by Amir and Khalil.
I've heard of 2.
You've heard of 2? I've heard of 3.
And it's a vast improvement over last year when half the nominees weren't online.
I think this actually might be one of the... it's not quite the first year, but it's definitely one of the first years where I've looked at the list of nominees and prepared for pain, and none of them are totally embarrassing. I'm not asking for the nominees to be the comics that I would pick, because that's never going to happen. And, you know, I'm not asking for them to be any of my comics either. I don't submit to that sort of thing, and I don't expect. I try to keep that possibility completely out of my mind. But you know, there are no nominees here that are glorified advertisements for video games, or comics that updated three times in the year for which they're being awarded.
Right.
None of them are dreadful. None of them are just
some
big industry.
Some of them are good, actually.
Yeah. Yep.
I'd heard of four and immediately subscribed to the fifth.
Yeah.
They are actually all pretty good.
I've been following Lackadaisy for a long time. I mean, we even talked about it on the show a few weeks ago. They posted that great How to Draw Faces.
Right, right.
How to Draw Expressions, and that was pretty amazing. In fact, wasn't that even linked in your Skype, T? In your Skype for a while? I thought I saw that.
Yeah.
About to start the call.
Yeah, and your Skype profile, I think I saw the link for it, so.
Yeah.
Really? That did happen. I mean, I forget what's on Skype, what's on my Skype, and what's on my Twitter, and what have you.
But I mean, these guys still are insiders in that they are connected to the big companies. But at the same time, it really does look like this is the first year that the Eisners are taking webcomics seriously. Instead of saying, didn't someone over at Marvel make some kind of comic and put it on the web? Let's nominate that sort of thing.
Well, I've talked a lot to the organizers of the Eisners in years past. They really do have a very thankless job. Trying to familiarize themselves with a sector of comics that they're just not naturally familiar with, and you know. They can only put comics into the running for the Eisners if they're submitted. A lot of people don't know that. And a lot of people like me just don't care. So that disqualifies probably a large number of comics that actually would have been worthwhile right off the bat. I think it's interesting. You said that these nominees were all connected, all part of the all have some clear connection to the more traditional publishing industry. I think that says something right there. The fact that so many people who are connected to traditional comics are producing work that's actually worthy of attention online.
Yeah.
It is kind of a correlation causation thing, though. I mean, there are plenty of non-traditional artists doing amazing work. That's kind of a case where there are other circles where it can. I mean, there are a lot of webcomics awards things out there. I don't think any of them are really going great. They've all had their issues in terms of people being upset about the voting and this and that. I don't think you can have an awards show without, or any sort of award.
Not like an industry-wide award, a definitive, but you can have your this community's awards or whatever. You can have your niche ones, which are more less questionable and more like, yes, this is our opinion sort of thing, but not like a definitive of all the webcomics sort of thing. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
Webcomic awards are as an invitation for fights. I mean, it always is. If you like in long protracted fights that go nowhere, then start a webcomic award. That's the best way to get into that.
I've been there. There was this little dust up few years ago when I was on the staff of the Web Cartoonist's Choice Awards, and one of the categories was best romantic comic, and Penny and Aggie actually had a shot at it, and somebody who did a comic that didn't really fit into any of the categories decided that he would try to encourage his readers to vote for him in best romantic comic because he said his comic was actually the best necromantic comic, and he figured that was close enough. You know, I'm still not sure that there was a right way to handle that situation, but naturally, everybody walked away mad.
All right. Well, with that, unfortunately, we'll have to wrap up here today. Thanks to all for bearing with us, despite the slight issues that I think, despite Fess's best interests, will probably show up in the recording anyway. I know you try. I know you try. Anyway, I'd like to take a moment and thank those of us who were able to be on the show today. Thanks, Eric, T, Fess, and I've, of course, been Roscott. Thank you all so much for tuning in to today's episode of the Webcomic Beacon, the newscast. Be sure to tune in to our future episodes and all the other shows from the Webcomic Beacon, and you can find all that and more at webcomicbeacon.com. And with that, I would like to just remind you all, peanut butter and jelly, and have a wonderful week. Talk to you all soon. Bye.
Tune in for more at webcomicbeacon.com.